Eugene Solomon has picked up a lot of great stories and a lot of passengers during the 37 years he's driven a yellow cab in New York City. And he tells some of his best involving high rollers, deadbeats, movie stars, prostitutes, and mob hitmen in his memoir, Confessions of a New York Taxi Driver. It's published by The Friday Project, which is an imprint of HarperCollins. I'm very pleased that it has brought him to our show today.
Did you come by taxi? I came by subway.
37 years seems like a long time to drive a cab in New York City. Are you still driving?
I am. I'll be out there tonight.
And how many days a week do you drive?
Three. Three nights, three 12-hour shifts.
So three how many hour shifts?
12-hour shifts.
Really?
That's the normal in a taxi situation.
And those 12-hour shifts, are they overnight?
Yes, from 5 p.m. to 5 a.m.
Is that what you prefer?
As opposed to 5 a.m. to 5 p.m.?
Well, yeah. Yes, it is. Well, I would think that you'd have a lot more potential passengers driving during the day than at night.
You would think that. But actually, there's really quite a dead zone in the middle of the day, during the day. Plus, at night, there's so much less traffic, and you can get longer rides, more lucrative rides. And also, there's more fun and adventure at night.
And these days, cab drivers are taking passengers like me into Brooklyn. There was a time in the past when they would complain or say, no, I'm off duty or whatever, and do everything possible not to take me into Brooklyn. But do you find yourself going to all five boroughs?
Well, let me say the mantra of the taxi cab driver used to be, I don't go to Brooklyn. And that you're right. I point that out in the book, actually, as something that's a major change.
But when did that change?
I go to all four boroughs.
Yeah, you've never been to Staten Island?
I go, on the average, I get a fare to Staten Island once a year.
Mm. You're just as likely to get a fare to Connecticut, perhaps.
Exactly.
And now, why do you think that is?
Because you're competing with a free ferry, and it's a long, expensive ride with a very expensive toll that the passenger has to pay. Just, I guess, numbers of people who want to go to Staten Island are less than, let's say, Brooklyn.
Well, why are drivers more willing to go into Brooklyn these days or to Queens or to the Bronx?
I think because they are milder-mannered than the taxi drivers of old.
I thought it was that there was a crackdown at some point.
And I think drivers today are more protective of their careers, of their jobs as taxi drivers, and don't want to take any chances of losing their licenses.
You started driving a taxi in 1977. Do you think there are many other drivers out there who've been doing it so long?
No.
What had you been doing before?
A variety of this and that sort of thing. Nothing substantial. At one point, I was selling umbrellas on the street.
But you're a writer. So how did that – you were selling umbrellas to pay for your writing habit?
Well, I was selling umbrellas, of course.
You had to wait until it rained.
I have always been interested and active as a writer. And, of course, as so many would say, that doesn't mean you're making a dime from it.
You were brought in by a friend named Harry, and you shared a cab.
That's right.
Are you still sharing that cab?
No. That's changed. Harry, for example, is a chiropractor. But I work out of a taxi garage, so I do share cabs. I get a cab every night out of a garage.
I'm wondering if you drive mainly for the money or, from reading this book, for the stories. I ask because you are also a writer. You've written stage plays, a screenplay, a libretto. Been writing about your taxi driving experiences from the beginning, first in a journal and then in a blog. First of all, are you a writer who drives a cab or a cab driver who writes?
Now that I've had a book published, I'm a writer who drives a cab. Before I was a cab driver who wrote.
So you were making more money from the driving.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Did many of the stories in this book appear in your blog first?
No. Actually, only 9 or 10 of the stories out of over 100 in the book have actually appeared in my blog.
And what's your blog called?
Cabs Are for Kissing.
And that's because, we'll get to it a little later, people not only kiss, but they do a lot more in cabs sometimes.
Oh, it's one of the unspeakable subjects.
Well, I want to put that off for a moment because I want to address something that is probably enters more people's minds. You've said your passengers are always surprised when they realize that you're what they call an American, which means, I assume, an English-speaking non-immigrant.
Right, and a white American.
Most of the cab drivers I meet these days do seem to be recent immigrants, usually from India, Pakistan, or African countries. Has taxi driving always been a job that attracted immigrants?
I think after a certain point in our history, it did, maybe after the 1960s. But I'm told that back when, you know, you go off as far back as the 20s or 30s and 40s and so on, that all the cab drivers were Americans. Uh-huh. But that changed, I think, according to the economic difficulties and the difficulties of the job itself.
You've written that changes in the rules that govern New York City taxis have made it more difficult to make money driving a cab than it once was. Like you can't play with the meter.
Well, I didn't mean
that's
that.
Not what you meant. I know.
I meant more than anything, the city's hesitation to give us rate increases when they're timely has been perhaps the most difficult thing. We once went 8 years without a rate increase.
Well, I used to know a guy who drove a cab on the side, and he said he made most of his money when he would negotiate with passengers about fares and didn't turn the meter on. You can't. If you do that now, you get serious fine, don't you?
I guess you could. You could still do that, actually. I think he meant the occasional ride where it would be very lucrative would be something like a ride out of town where you negotiate it. But you're not going to often find somebody negotiating a fare to Brooklyn or something.
My guess is Eugene Solomon, who's written a book called Confessions of a New York Taxi Driver. When people learn that you're a cab driver, they usually ask one of two questions. They are, have you been held up?
Okay.
And do people have sex in your car?
Oh, thank you. I've never been held up, fortunately. Actually, I'm very careful. I have a system I've developed which sort of vets the passengers so that if I think it's a dangerous situation, I take action before it becomes serious.
What kind of action can you take?
Well, if I don't want to get too wordy, but it's like three strikes and you're out is what I call it. Strike one, you're in my cab and you look quite dangerous to me just by your appearance. Okay, but then you're going to a part of town I don't like at a time of day I don't like. That's strike two. If I get strike two on someone, I make myself have a conversation with that person. And I watch his reaction to my communication in the mirror. And 99% of the time, he's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's still somebody I don't like, he's sullen or hostile, you have to get him out of the cab before you get to the destination.
Well, you also have protection these days that you didn't have in the past because they put up that bulletproof window.
Right.
There was a time when cab drivers were totally vulnerable.
I drove probably half my years as a taxi driver with no partition at all.
Your blog is Cabs Are for Kissing, and that's based on a rather sweet story.
Yes. I had an elderly up in years couple who had not been in New York City for, I think, 40 years at the time. And the husband was coming for a cancer treatment. And they wanted to see the sites that they used to hang out at on the way to Sloan Kettering. And we found that they were all gone. The Hornet Hornets were gone. The Schraffs were gone. And they were becoming more despondent to see that their old haunts no longer existed. And so finally, the gentleman said, well, how about the Plaza Hotel? That's still there. So, sure. And then he said, how about a ride through the park? So it was still a time of day when you could get into the park and do the whole circle. It takes about 15 minutes. And they were back there making out. Mm-hmm. And so the woman that said to me apologized for such behavior in a taxi. And I said, that's okay. Cabs are for kissing.
But some people go way beyond kissing. The first few times that you realize the couple in the back seat were having sex must have been very uncomfortable.
It is quite. It's. uncomfortable and, a great opportunity for a voyeur at the same time.
Well, how much can you see, and how often does it happen?
Well, it does not happen nearly as often as you'd think if you've been watching Taxicab Confessions on HBO, but it does occasionally happen, even today. And I have two ways of handling the situation, Leonard. One is to take extremely sharp left and right turns in order to knock the female over. And the other one is at the end of the ride, charging them an extra $10 for the hotel room.
So what do they say when you ask them for the extra $10? Are they outraged or are they amused?
If they have any sense of humor, they're amused and should fork over the $10.
Well, how do you pay it? Do you just ignore what's going on?
Yeah. Probably I do.
You tell a funny story about three people who came to the cab, and they insisted on one of the women sitting in the front.
Oh my God, yes. That was really outrageous. That was perhaps...
That has to be very awkward because you're not only aware of what's going on in the back, but she is as well.
I would call that the mother of awkward. A passenger sitting up front, an attractive blonde actually, sits up front with me while her mischievous girlfriend shoves a guy in the back seat at the beginning of the ride, and they go at it. And so not only are they going at it with great vigor in the back seat, this is a ride to Brooklyn, but I and the woman next to me have to confront each other while this is going on. Oh, God.
You say at the time that this book went to press, you had driven 114 different celebrities in your taxi, at least people you knew were celebrities.
Right.
Have you driven anyone famous since?
Yes. Who did I have? I had Elliot Spitzer recently.
Hmm. Well, you've subdivided them into three categories, into different categories, movie stars, porn stars, Mick Jagger, exes, yes. Fugitive hippies. So the fugitive hippie is only one.
That's a single category. How many are there?
Well, that was Abbie Hoffman, the late Abbie Hoffman.
Yes.
When did this happen? While he was a fugitive or later?
No, it was what happened was two men got in the cab, and one of them was getting out before the other one. He was so I dropped the first one off, and while the two of them were in there, this one of them was a motor mouth, just going on and on, obsessively communicating to the other guy. He gets out and goes away, and then the other one says, "That was Abbie Hoffman. I'm his parole officer."
So they were having their parole meeting.
I don't know if it was. Yeah, they must have been.
Do you recognize Mick Jagger exes?
No, that's my favorite category, by the way.
So they tell you I used to go out with Mick Jagger?
No. What are the odds of getting not one but two? I guess the odds aren't that bad because Mick Jagger, you know. But actually, the first one was Marianne Faithfull quite a few years ago. Mm. And she told me who she was. And I actually later learned that she was a Mick Jagger ex, but that counts. And the other was Bianca Jagger, who actually left some papers in the back seat. I did not know who she was during the ride. She left like a calendar book. So I called her up the next day, and it was Halston's townhouse that I reached. And I said, hello, and I said who I was, and I said, can I speak to Bianca? Just a minute. And there she was on the phone, so I returned it.
How often do people leave stuff in the cab that you can return? If you find a cell phone, it's impossible to know whose it is.
Oh, no. To the contrary. The cell phone is the easiest thing to return. You look through there as long as you
can
get
into
it.
Well, you got to be able to get through the password.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. But nevertheless, I've had great success returning cell phones.
Do celebrities tend to talk to you?
Sometimes. It depends. It's like, I don't want to talk to a celebrity about his area of celebrity because that would be unfair and rude, I think. But I find that, first of all, if he's alone or she's alone, I bring up a subject that would be common to anyone. Like in Paul Simon's case, for example, we had a lengthy conversation about baseball.
And you suggested that he buy the Yanks from George Steinbrenner. But you say you've picked him up three times or so?
Twice.
How can that be? Do you just wind up on the same corner while he's looking for a cab?
Yeah, the first time it was in front of his building where he lived on Central Park West, standing there with his doorman, and I made a sweeping U-turn to get to him.
You saw right away who it was.
Yeah, and then now I'm looking for him. After that, I'm always wondering if he's going to be there, and sure enough, another time he was.
Well, I have had situations where I've gotten into a cab and had the cab driver tell me he knew who I was because I'd been in his cab before.
Right.
And I just think that of all the cabs in New York and all the corners in New York, that seems almost impossible. The mathematical odds have to be extraordinary.
You know, that's a subject of great New York debate. There's actually a chapter in the book called Karma versus Coincidence. And the question becomes, was it karma or just coincidence? And I have had that happen, and many passengers have had that happen. They recognize the driver or something. I've been people twice on the same day.
Well, if the driver has a swastika on his arm, it's pretty easy to recognize
him. Yes.
Wasn't Leonardo DiCaprio especially interested in talking to you?
Yes.
What was you think he was doing research for a film?
No, I think he was out partying with his friends. He was about 17 years old at the time. I didn't know who he was. It was before Titanic. And they had this entourage, kind of rowdy, coming from one club and going to another, all underage, one of them smoking a cigar. So one of his friends brought it to my attention that this was Leonardo DiCaprio back here, and I'd never heard of him. So he wanted me to know then who he was, and he got into the conversation, and he told me some of the films he'd done. And we wound up talking about Romeo and Juliet, which he had just finished, and I know my Romeo and Juliet, so we could talk about this. And at the end of the ride, he stayed in the taxi for a couple of minutes, and we discussed not only Romeo and Juliet, but he turned the tables on me and started asking me questions about what it's like to be a taxi driver. And this very much impressed me because here was this kid on a rocket ride being interested instead of just being interesting.
Well, who tends to initiate the conversation?
I do.
Many longtime New Yorkers remember the checker cabs fondly. Are there any on the road now?
Oh, as taxis? No.
You confess that you may have played a part in the demise of the checker cab. What'd you do?
Leonard, you shouldn't have said that. They'll hate me. It was a conversation I had with a particular middle-aged businessman who was on his way to Penn Station. I was driving a checker, and the car had no suspension. We hit a pothole, and it went kaboom. And I felt so bad about the pothole that I said something sarcastic about the car to him. And his response was to take out a notepad and a pen, and he asked me to tell him everything I don't like about checkers, which was great because I started listing them one after another. So he tells me at the end of the ride that the following week he's going to be in Kalamazoo, Michigan, where he's having lunch with his old childhood friend who is the chairman of the board of the Checker Motor Company. And I thought, wow, great. I've done something to help the taxi riding public. Instead, 2 weeks later, he announced the check was going out of business. So I figured this was the last straw for the checker company.
But there were people who preferred checkers. Once you saw Jackie Kennedy hailing a cab, and she ignored you because there was a checker.
No. She ignored me because – she didn't ignore me. She got into the checker because I already had a passenger.
Now,
but Andy Warhol ignored me. Let me drive by when I was not driving a checker and took the checker that was coming up behind me.
What about the green taxis? Are cab drivers upset about them?
Yes. I would say the medallion cab industry does not welcome any competition.
Uber cabs now have come along as well.
That's another thing. I think the thing that we're most concerned about if you drive a yellow cab is simply how will it affect our income? But
cab drivers are responsible for the green cabs because there still is, you know, if you're looking for a cab in most parts of the city other than Manhattan, unless a cab just happens to have dropped somebody off, you're not going to find one.
Probably not. I mean, I wouldn't deny that in certain areas, certain specific streets in Brooklyn or Queens or the Bronx, you may have a need for a street hail. But you've got to remember, first of all, the car service is excellent throughout the city. Everyone I've spoken to about it says that they call for a car service and within 5 minutes they're there. I think the problem is that the TLC is not particularly interested in looking out for the welfare of taxi drivers. I mean, how much money can we make driving a cab? We're worried that they're going to put so many green cabs on the street that they'll eventually wind up coming to Manhattan and trying to steal the business that we have there.
We don't have a lot of time, and so I can't get into the passenger you thought was going to die before you got him to the hospital, or the man who appeared to be very upset because he confessed to you he had just killed somebody. But in the movies, there's always that scene in the old days where somebody jumps into a cab and says, follow that car. Well, follow that cab.
Happens all the time in the movie.
And it's happened to you ever?
Only twice. All these years, only twice.
And do you have any idea why?
Yes. The first time, the fellow had left his briefcase in the cab that he just got out of. We had to get to that cab. And the other one was a man who was following his lover and her husband and wanted to see where they were going.
But somebody also wondered whether he was being followed.
Maybe.
So you have to try to do things where you are evading, where you're being elusive.
Right. I missed what you were saying. Yes, that's right. There has been a few times where it was not follow that cab, but lose that cab. And they were trying to get rid of somebody who they thought was following them. And in fact, they were following them.
You also mentioned talking about the guy who thought he'd kill somebody or had killed somebody.
Yes.
That passengers often tell you stuff that they should probably keep to themselves. Cab drivers like bartenders or priests or doctors?
In a way. Sure. Absolutely.
Because they think they'll never see you again.
That's right. And they are perhaps in some kind of a desperate situation and need to talk to someone.
Eugene Solomon, his book, Confessions of a New York Taxi Driver. It is published by the Friday Project, which is a division of what, Simon Schuster?
HarperCollins.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Leonard, it is my pleasure and honor to speak to you. You are frequently, your voice is frequently a passenger in my taxi, I want you to know.